So, I went to school in Albany and in Syracuse.
Hey.
So I've been...
Neighbor.
We're supposed to have you introduce yourself. That's
oh.
right.
Oh, okay.
Forgot. We should get into that first. Would you introduce yourself, please?
My name is Sam Harris. I play in a band called X Ambassadors.
Okay. Back to Ithaca.
Back to Ithaca.
Back to Ithaca.
Where it all started.
6 years old, snow, cold,
yep.
gray,
blah.
And you had to get the heck out.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yeah, as all young kids growing up in small little towns.
So I need revision. I don't like bios. Bios are boring. I like revisionist history. I like the between the lines stuff.
Yeah. So my dad, the part of the reason why I would get so stir crazy in Ithaca is because our dad, Casey, and I are brothers, and
right,
our dad
right.
is he's a publicist. He's in the film industry, so he was constantly traveling, and every once in a while we would get to go visit him on set and go to these crazy places. And one of these times I met his friend who was making a cartoon series, and I auditioned for the lead voice in this cartoon series that never aired. It never aired anywhere. But they flew me out to California. I was 9 years old, and I did this this voiceover thing for like 2 weeks. Did 23 episodes, and it was real. I felt like such a superstar. And then I come back to school, and like the cartoon show never airs, and like my friends
of course.
Are like, oh, cool. You know, I was LA.
You're the greatest unsung hero to your
That's
friends.
Right. That's right.
But really, guys, really, it happened.
It really happened. Did.
Okay, so what was the path that got you to NYC? What got you directly there?
Well, that was the closest big city, and it is sort of the center of everything anyways. So we just, you know, wanted to go to college. Noah and I were both looking at colleges there, and we ended up going to the same college.
Was that New School?
New School.
Yeah,
New
cool.
School University.
New School for the Arts.
New School for the Arts, yes.
That's right.
Yes. We went to Eugene Lang, which was the liberal arts
right,
sect
right.
of it. I remember we played in so many different bands together in high school. And it was always the same group of guys. It was me and Noah, Casey, and then, you know, we'd rotate drummers and bass players. And I remember this one, I used to go to this music store all the time, and this guy who worked there one time, after listening to this demo that we made, he said, you know, you guys would do pretty good if you moved to New York. I think you guys would do great. And so that kind of got the stars in my eyes. And
that was the end of that.
That was the end of that. That was the end of my life.
Yeah, however, let's face it. People could either say, this happened really fast, or this you waited a long time for this to happen really fast.
Exactly. That's
perception,
exactly
reality, right? All the PR is, well, they met up with the right guy, and next thing you know, they're signed, and voila, they're there, right?
Yeah, it's
that's
I
so
wish,
not
I
true.
I wish that it worked like that.
That's
I wish.
So not true. Let's go to today, because when things did happen, uh-huh. They really happened.
Yeah, they did. This whole thing has been happening in the matter of a couple months. You know, we had been in the band for around a little under 6 years now. We have been ex-ambassadors, the group of us playing together. But, you know, we had been doing it for so long, and then to have all of this suddenly happen this fast is really, it's kind of overwhelming and scary. But the thing is, we had 6 years to prepare for it, so we were ready, and we did it.
But, I mean, if you're going to do it right, to have the gentleman who was sitting right where you were, have him kind of see you in the right environment, to have him bring along his producer.
Yeah.
But at least you got the producer for his second rock record.
Yeah.
Not his first rock record. So they had already worn him down and told him what rock and roll was versus that there.
Exactly.
That rhythmic stuff.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the fact that with this whole machine that you walked into, as someone who was very, you know, a group that was very indie for 6 years, did you feel okay about making sure, and did you manage to keep your soul as you did this? Did you say okie dokie because you realized that it would get you where you want to go?
Yeah, totally. I mean, like, you know, there are sacrifices that have to be made when you are a band that is relatively unknown and you have powerful people looking at you, you know, saying you guys will be worth something someday. I mean, it's just the nature of the business, you know, there's no getting around it. I mean, yes, there have been times when it, you know, being a young band, you get more money up front. But I mean, there's always a way that you're going to pay
one way
around.
Or another. Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to get kicked around in the beginning, but that's part of it, you know, and you pay your dues. That's another way. It's another process of paying your dues. That's how we look at it.
Okay.
You know?
So just to go deeper in being more evil,
do it.
Your sound is not meant for the flannel shirt kids of Williamsburg or Silver Lake, is it?
Not at all.
So you're like a Brooklyn band. You're hearkening for another part of the world.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, I'm trying to think what part of Brooklyn. I mean, your producer could do Bed-Stuy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, right?
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, I think we are lucky in that there have been a few bands over the past year or so that have started to pave the way, you know, Imagine Dragons included and Fun and, you know, now bands like The Neighborhood, who, you know, maybe a couple years ago would not have been given the time of day by anyone, are now all over the radio and you know, up-and-coming bands like Walk the Moon, who have been doing it for a couple years.
I had them on very early, too. Spectacular.
Yeah, yeah, they're great. They're
fantastic.
Great. We played a show with them in London, and they're just such a phenomenal band. And we've done two shows with them, one in Brooklyn and one in London.
They're great.
And, yeah, you know, I think we, as a band, have never really wanted to be defined by a certain place. And we never wanted to put ourselves in any sort of a box and alienate anyone else from our music, just, you know, just because we wanted it to be as avant-garde and cool and interesting as possible. We, you know, we came from a small town, and coming from a small town, you want to escape that, and you want to do big things, and we wanted to make this big music that could reach, you know, a large amount of people.
And you can't help it because Lynyrd Skynyrd's big in upstate New York.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't get around the fact that upstate New York is the Grateful Dead meets Lynyrd Skynyrd meets Kiss meets...
Exactly, man.
That's what rolled on the jukebox and the joints when I went to
college.
Totally.
I mean, when we were in school, we were only exposed to, like, top 40 stuff.
Right.
And, like, you know, that the kids in my school were only listening to hip-hop and R&B. And that's the first music that I was exposed to that I fell in love with. And then later on in high school, I started, you know, discovering, you know, I had a cool girlfriend and she listened to lots of cool music. And
so she
I,
got you into Arcade Fire and all that stuff.
She got me into Arcade Fire. Yeah, you know, one of my first shows that I went to with her, I actually didn't go to with her. This is kind of a great story. She and I got into a fight and she was like, I'm going to the show. And I don't really want to talk. I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to see you. I'm like, fine. Do your thing. And I'm wandering around College Town and near Cornell, and I bump into my friend, this girl, Taylor. And I'm like, Taylor, what's up? What are you doing? Hey, how's it going? She's like, I'm going to this show. And I'm like, you know what? I want to party. I'm gonna go to this show with you. And it turned out to be the same show she was going to. It was Arcade Fire. They were playing in this tiny little cafeteria at Cornell. And,
back in the day. Before the big light show.
Yeah, man. And that show really was one of those life-changing experiences for me because I was like, that was the first time I got to see that side of music. You know, this indie kind of, they were doing something so new and utterly different than anything else I had seen. And you know, at the time I had been listening to the Red Hot Chili Peppers and, you know, big bands like that. And here I was, you know, being taken to school by these guys in a tiny little cafeteria. And I knew, I was like, this is something special. And this is going to be the future of rock and roll music, you know, and I wanted to be a part of that. But I think what they do is something that's on a much bigger scale.
Everybody's already read the quote that Alex was very, quote, hands-on.
Yeah.
So you come in, you have the vision. You've done music for all these years. Mm-hmm. You have the advantage of having this guy who has just finished producing what became a major record.
Yeah.
And then he gets with you, and the two of you say to each other,
we already knew exactly what... We were on the same page the minute I met him. You know, I had drinks with him when I was in London, and... over Christmas, he was there too with his family, and my dad lives out there now. We sat down, and immediately it was like we were just speaking the same language. So, you know, as hands-on as he was, it was a mutually encouraged kind of thing. You know, I wanted him to be hands-on. You know, working with a producer for the first time, I wanted there to be somebody to act as a filter, you know, and to act as someone who could say, I think you can do better. I think this is good. I think that's not good. I think you got to switch this around. I like being pushed.
Now, am I getting it right that, for example, on Unconsolable, he pushed you back?
Well, yeah, you know, actually.
Which is an interesting thing to hear that a producer did, that he pulled, that it was a much more lush, more pounding, and he pulled it back. That's interesting.
Yeah, him and Dan really fell in love with this acoustic version of it that we had orchestrated prior to meeting them, and had recorded live for this thing called Alter TV based out of Pittsburgh. And they just loved the sound of it, loved the vibe, and kept kind of pushing us to strip down. And we had already, you know, prior to meeting them also, had been getting a great response from this acoustic version of the song. So we said, you know, screw it, why not? Let's try it and see what happens. And it has turned into just such a different beast. I think it's way more subtle, and just there's a haunting quality to it now that I think the big bombastic version lacked. And I'm glad we went there. We, you know, they sort of put the idea in our heads and we ran with it and came up with this thing. And you know, at the end of the day, when we went in and recorded it in L.A., everyone was happy with it.
It's great. You're on this tour.
Yeah.
You get to play with big crowds.
Yeah.
And then you get to work the record.
Oh, yeah.
And then you get to go back and you're going to be playing
small clubs
again. And this is what happens. You're totally cool with that.
Totally. 100%.
It's kind of back ass words in a way.
Yeah,
right?
But that's the way to do it. You know, you have to start. I mean, they did it. Imagine Dragons did it. You know, you start from the ground up.
Right.
You work those rooms full of, you know, like 30 people. You know, if there are 10 people in that room that have
come there
to see you, that is a win, you know? And these kids that are coming to these smaller shows, are people that love going to see bands.
Right.
And they will talk about you, and they will tell their friends. And then their friends will hear it on the radio, and they'll say, hey, didn't you tell me about this band last week? And they'll say, yeah, they're playing again next week. You want to come see them? And they'll say, yeah. And then they bring a friend, and the next, you know, they bring their friends, and it builds and builds and builds. And word of mouth and really working it from the ground up like that that's the way that you keep your fans. That's the way that you build into this gigantic beast, you know, that they have managed to,
as part of the joy and laughter
as it can be, you know, going from playing something like this, which is very cushy and to going to playing the dingy clubs where you have no room to break down all your stuff, and you have, you know, like just a line check.
Yep. If you're lucky, everything's plugged in.
It's fine. It's rock and roll.
Exactly.
You got to deal with it.
So I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And it's two of your songs as the bread, and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between.